from Freakonomics Radio, a new series about a role model we didn't know we needed.
So many crazy things really did happen to him.
The physicist Richard Feynman was one of the most brilliant scientists of his generation, but he was also a troublemaker, an obsessive, and a man who spoke truth to power. Along the way, he created a blueprint for how to lead a life of honest inquiry.
He was a brilliant theoretical physicist, but what really made him stand out was his humanity.
The curious, brilliant, vanishing Mr. Feynman on Freakonomics Radio.
Here in New York City, health providers have been told to give booster shots to all adults who want them. Any chance we could expand that to adults who don't want them? Because they're the problem.
And this morning, we'll talk to Mayor Bill de Blasio. Plus, Ted Lasso himself, Jason Sudeikis, is our guest. And of course, there is plenty of news to cover this morning as one insurrectionist is sentenced to prison. Another could-be conspirator, Steve Bannon, pleads not guilty to charges of obstructing the investigation. We'll have the latest on the Capitol attack, the attack on our democracy. And speaking of Congress, Republican Paul Gosar is booted from his House assignments after posting a violent cartoon threatening his colleagues. Can lawmakers finally get a grip with just weeks left to deal with the debt limit and another possible shutdown? That's the question among many this morning. Good morning and welcome to Morning Joe. It is Thursday, November 18th. With us here in Washington, we have former chairman of the Republican National Committee, Michael Steele, New York Times, Washington Bureau Chief, Elizabeth Buemiller, and national editor at the Financial Times, Ed Luce, along with Willie, Joe, and me.
You know, Good to have people you all ask me this board. Question over a generation. It's so nice to be able to ask this question to somebody else.
What?
Michael. Your party. What's
your
wrong with
party?
What you know,
Michael.
You have to answer that question.
Go
I don't
there.
Have to answer that
Man,
question
I haven't
anymore.
Even finished my coffee
What's
yet.
Wrong with them? They're excommunicating people from the church of the Republican Party for voting for a bipartisan bill,
right.
But they're cool with violent memes talking about killing AOC.
When you catch an infection, and if you don't treat the infection, this is what you get. You get right. sicker and sicker, and that's what you see happening. It's really something that when you stop and think about just the way you put it out there, that they would strip a Liz Cheney of her leadership. They would then, you know, castigate and put aside individuals like Kinzinger. But then they embrace a guy who puts up memes talking about killing
right.
their
yeah.
political opponent.
Is it too optimistic to say that there are two Republican parties now, that you've got the Senate, Elizabeth, that is a bit more mainstream? I know people watching, but what about a little more mainstream? And then you've got the House that's just full on insurrectionist, full on murder memes, full on performance art. These are people who, speaking of a generation ago would have been shock jocks for the morning drive time in Nome, Alaska. Now they get elected so they can be shock jocks on the back bench.
Well, the answer is, of course, yes. I mean, gerrymandering is a big part of it. It's only going to get worse in the next election. But I also want to just point out that, you know, there's been violence throughout. We've talked about this at the Times. There's been violence throughout American history before
right.
the Civil War, 1920s, 1960s. What's different now, there's been political violence. What's different now is that a major party is basically embracing it
right.
and condoning it. That is what is really different today. And that is what is scaring a lot of people. We have Republicans not, as AOC said yesterday, she said, can't we just say this is not acceptable, you know, and in the debate in the House. And what you saw was one Republican after another, including Kevin McCarthy, stand up and defend this.
So let's get right to it. From the first time in more than a decade, the House yesterday voted to censure a member of Congress. By a 223 to 207 tally, Republican Paul Gosar of Arizona was censured and stripped of his committee assignments. Only two Republicans voted in favor. More on that in just a moment. The punishment comes after Gosar posted a violent, animated video on social media, edited to appear as if he was killing a New York Democrat, a congresswoman, and also I don't even want to say it.
Slashing President Biden with a weapon.
On the House floor yesterday, Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy blasted Democrats for, quote, destroying the institution and silencing the minority, leading to this response by Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez.
It is a sad day in which a member who leads a political party in the United States of America cannot bring themselves to say that issuing a depiction of murdering a member of Congress is wrong. What is so hard about saying that this is wrong? This is not about me. This is not about Representative Gosar. But this is about what we are willing to accept.
Madam Speaker, not since the Civil War has Congress operated under the constant threat of violence from some of its own members. But here we are. That is the behavior that Mr. Gosar has encouraged. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised, having watched so many of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle incite and then express support for the insurrectionists who nearly killed us in this chamber on January 6th. We cannot let the Republican Party make Congress the only workplace in America where violence against your coworkers is not a crime, but a credential. If we don't hold people like Mr. Gosar accountable, we will only embolden the worst people in our politics to bring their fever dreams to life. That is why today we are standing up for the safety of our colleagues, for the safety of Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, and for the future of our democracy.
Well,
that was very well put, Democratic Congressman Mondaire Jones.
Yeah. Willie, it's just absolutely crazy that you do have a party that, again, the fringes in Congress, sitting in Congress, are talking about violence. And there's one example after another example. Remember, Congresswoman from North Georgia had a campaign ad, I guess, on Facebook where she's holding a weapon. It may have been an AR-15. And then she had members, four Democratic members, and basically said she was going after them in a sense. Time and time again, there's violent imagery. And this is happening to members of Congress and the Republican Party.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen in a vacuum. Yesterday we heard, oh, come on, it's a cartoon, it's anime. Here's what anime actually is. But these things aren't happening in a vacuum. They're happening at a time of heightened violence. They're happening at a time when people are compelled by what they see and hear from politicians to say, try to overturn a presidential election by storming the Capitol and calling for the death of the vice president and the Speaker of the House. So this may just be posts to, you know, Facebook or videos on Twitter to these members of Congress, but to the people who are getting those signals, it may be something else. As we said, only two Republicans, Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney, voted with Democrats to censure Gosar. One other Republican, Congressman David Joyce of Ohio, voted present, he says, because of his position on the Ethics Committee. Congressman Kinzinger followed up his vote to censure with this tweet, writing, quote, so let me understand. Gosar's creepy anime of murder and such is okay, but John Katko is the center for negotiating and voting for infrastructure? The majority leader has once again abdicated his leadership to the insane asylum. End quote. Mm. To Kinzinger's point, many Republican members of Congress want to punish the 13 members of their party who voted for the infrastructure bill by stripping them of committee assignments. Those 13 House Republican members have been called traitors by members of their own party and have had their contact information posted online. At least two of them have reported receiving death threats. One Republican, a freshman from Georgia, questioned why two of those New York Republicans are even on the Homeland Security Committee in the first place, saying this to reporters, quote, what's a guy up in New York have to do with Homeland Security? Shouldn't it be someone down along the border?
Willie.
Oh, my God.
Willie.
You can't pay for that stupid.
What? That is a special kind of stupid. That's like somebody asking, what does somebody from Hawaii know about how World War II started? I mean, it's just sheer insanity.
She's talking about a congressman from New York, John Katko, who voted for the infrastructure bill, a Republican, and wondering why he should be on the Homeland Committee. What does New York have to do with Homeland Security? There's no need for explanation. That's either staggering stupidity or just trolling. I think in this case, it's probably a combination of the two.
Yeah, Ed. So you look at this Republican Party, and you look. Why does this matter? If this were a party that were destined for the minority, for the next generation, as parties like this would be in the past, because this sort of extremism, until this moment in time, would always be voted out. it wouldn't matter, and we'd just go backbenchers being crazy, but with a whole lot of violence thrown in there. But here you have Kevin McCarthy, who desperately wants to be Speaker of the House, who sold his political soul time and time again to be Speaker of the House, embarrasses Republicans in the Senate every day with his stupidity and with his cravenness. And he's, my God, if Vegas were putting odds out there, I mean, you'd have to say he's an overwhelming favorite to be the next Speaker of the House. Republicans are so lined up in 22. So everything that's happening now not only has an impact on Kevin McCarthy being the next Speaker of the House, but also what happens in 24 when a whole bunch of crazy people, if they continue down this trajectory, are going to be deciding what votes they allow to be counted for the Electoral College and what votes don't. And then the United States of America then runs into a real constitutional crisis.
It does. I mean, it's interesting you say that this isn't normal for a mainstream political party. The name McCarthy does sort of ring bells from the 1950s. McCarthyism under Kevin McCarthy, slightly different because he is the leader and will be the speaker, and is clearly following a mob idea about American democracy, that it is Biden is the big lie, essentially, that he's going to then prosecute as speaker in a potential presidential election with the majority of the states being Republican controlled, and therefore the ability to carry out that Eastman memo that we have talked so much about. So a sort of new McCarthyism in service of Donald Trump. Wow. You're right to point out that the Senate is slightly less insane. Trump, in fact, has been ranting against the old crow McConnell, Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, a constant battle with McConnell every day.
For having enabled and then voted for this infrastructure bill. I mean,
by the way, 19 Republican senators voting for the
and 19 Republican senators. They are traitors. voting for infrastructure, which Trump ran on and had, a week on every month of his presidency, is a traitor to Republicanism. So I don't think there's any right-wing party in the Democratic world that compares to the Republican Party. It's gone off the reservation. It no longer belongs in the company of Democratic parties.
Well,
and I guess the challenge is to alert people to this, because it becomes very easy to get numbed to what's going on.
Well, the challenge is whether the Democrats in the remaining, 14 months they're in power, whether they're going to pass voting rights legislation that actually protects not the Democratic Party, but Western-style democracy.
Yes.
I mean, that's what, we're sitting here watching Democrats, yell at each other in halls over numbers. And the headline here is Republican state legislatures across the country are passing laws that actually stop the vote counters from having the final say. But instead, you can have right-wing state legislatures deciding what votes are counted and what votes aren't.
I mean, the voting rights bill that they're now talking about is way watered down from where it started. So it's not going to make a difference in those states at all. And that is the great fear. And this is that happened. We're now aware of it, but it kind of happened under the wire. It happened during the Trump administration. They very methodically put in people in the state Republican parties who were going to push this. And this happened without us actually seeing a lot of it. But now we're aware of it, but there's not a whole lot people can do about it.
But there's a full frontal assault that I think, to your point, Joe, Democrats need to wrap their head around and do the politics on. Okay, don't you're sitting there arguing policy, and Republicans are moving in politics. You've got, to your point, at the state and local level, you've got the infiltration in our election system of individuals who will be running for, secretaries of state, board of elections. who will be set up to execute a strategy on the back end. Then you've got, to your point, on something like voting rights, this big issue that's sitting there. All you have to do is pull the politics on it. Just do it.
Right.
Push back against what you see coming off Capitol Hill from the Republicans and make them own their opposition to it.
Well, exactly.
And if you don't do the politics on this, then you're absolutely right. It doesn't matter. Because by the time you get into 2022, it's too late. It's set. Yeah.
And by the way, Willie, if there are exceptions for federal judges on the filibuster, and if there are exceptions for Supreme Court nominees on the filibuster, which is, make no mistake of it, the number one issue for the Republican base, and it has been for a generation, then there is no excuse, no excuse at all for Democrats not to make an exception to the filibuster for voting rights and civil rights. That's about as easy as it gets. No excuses.
And Mitch McConnell would tell you that is his legacy. He hopes, anyway, all of those judges, while people have been yelling about other things put in place over his tenure. Yeah, absolutely. You're not alone in that idea that they should blow through the filibuster. They've got a couple of Democrats they might have to convince of that, though. Meanwhile, Republicans continue to go after Liz Cheney. No surprise there. Republican Senator Ted Cruz going after Cheney for her opposition to former President Donald Trump. Cheney, though, continues to fire back. Here are Cruz's comments from Tuesday, followed by Cheney's response yesterday.
I think she falls into the category of people who Donald Trump just broke, just shattered. And she is, you and I are both old enough to have played pinball games. She is on tilt.
I love them.
She hates Donald Trump so much that it just has, it has overridden everything in her system.
Senator,
she's lashing out at Trump,
Senator,
at Republicans, at everything. She's become a Democrat. And it's sad to watch what has happened. It is Trump derangement syndrome.
I think that Trump broke Ted Cruz. Ted used to say he was a constitutional conservative. But now he is so desperate for political approval that he will even advocate, suggest secession. I think that a real man would be defending his wife and his father and the Constitution.
So, Joe, we know that Ted Cruz says whatever needs to be said to the person in front of him to please him. But my gosh, Ted Cruz, of all people, if you want to talk about being broken by Donald Trump, obviously he had horrible things to say about Donald Trump during the campaign. Donald Trump insulted his wife, accused his father of being in on the assassination of JFK. And now he rallies to Donald Trump's defense whenever he gets the chance.
Well, and the thing is, all right, here's the deal. I've talked about this for a while. When we're kids, we stick our hands on the hot stove one time. Ow. Then you don't keep doing it. Ted.
Scott, like a.
He keeps going
like
after Liz Cheney.
From all the burns.
Just move along. Walk past the hot stove because.
You can't help it.
She's going to talk about Ted not being a real man for not standing up. For his wife. And I mean, my God, I mean, and she said he's not a real man for not standing up for his daddy. I it's hard for me to believe Elizabeth. He's from Texas, because I can tell you,
don't
most,
put Elizabeth
most,
in this.
Most men I know in Texas, if you insult their wife and their daddy, I know Texas.
This is why
they don't put up with that. And Liz understands because she's from Wyoming, because, you know, here's a funny thing in Wyoming. They don't take kindly the people accusing their daddy of murder or calling their wife ugly. But here's poor Ted.
Right.
He's just gone right along with it. And thanks to Liz Cheney, we're reminded of that once again.
They underestimate her. You know, she doesn't take anything from those guys. And she responds. It was a fabulous response, you know, and questioning his manhood. And she's right. I mean, as Willie pointed out, shall we not forget the things that Ted Cruz said about Donald Trump during the primaries?
Right.
And
right.
It's like he's amnesia. And he's now he's doing what he has to do.
Well, it's what John Heilman always would say about Donald Trump. Everything he says, Michael, is either projection or confession.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what was happening in that interview, because, you know, I will say Liz Cheney, people like me, you know, you, we look back at the Republican Party. You know, you don't see me like crying on this show going, I was wrong about deficits. I was wrong about. No, I am who I am.
Yep.
I hope I'm maturing and growing in areas where I had blind spots, but I am who I am. Liz Cheney, she is who she is. Check the record. 95. I said yesterday,
that's it.
She has a lifetime 95% ACU rating. I had a 95% ACU rating. I've changed here and there a little bit, just like everybody does. But Ted Cruz sold his soul to a failed game show host.
Yep.
And he's the one who's bobbing around like a pinball machine. Like, Donald Trump is horrible, the most horrible human being ever. He's trash. How dare he say that about my wife? How dare he accuse my dad of assassinating JFK? And then Donald Trump gets power and suddenly, bing, 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 bing.
Well, they're
the pinball machine just keeps on going for Ted. Liz is the same, but she's always been.
Yeah, she is. And that's why what you see from the supposed right, these conservatives coming after her.
So what do we call them? Because they're not conservative.
They're not conservative. They're not Republicans. The reality of it, there are two aspects of what she said, I think, kind of sums up and the whole thing. One, Donald Trump broke Ted Cruz.
Yeah, he did.
And you can just, after broke, fill in any number of names.
Yeah.
Of Republicans from leadership to whatever, right? And two, to the back end point, she made it very clear that a real man would defend his wife. A real man would honor his father and defend his father.
Of course.
A real man would defend the Constitution. If Ted Cruz wants to continue to play this game with her, he will lose. Because here's the point. If Liz and Adam and so many others are so insignificant, why the hell do you keep talking about them?
Well, exactly.
Why do you keep responding and engaging with them?
Right.
I mean, you stripped her of her power. Mm-hmm. You sicked the state party on her back at home. You're going to primary. What are you worried about?
Yeah.
Well, clearly you must be worried about something. And that is of if you're going to measure the men in the room against the one woman,
I don't think any of us really would if we had to be in a foxhole with somebody and have somebody helping us fight out of a corner, you taking Liz Cheney or are you taking Ted Cruz or that guy with a really small neck from Missouri who keeps talking about how manhood's been taken away from video games.
Yeah.
That is an easy call.
I mean, seriously.
We have to...
But that's another thing, Willie. Like, this whole thing, that guy with a little neck from Missouri, he keeps talking about how there's a war on masculinity. Can I just say here, and I'm sorry, Mika, it's just true. Real men, they don't notice, okay? Uh-huh. Is there a war on masculinity? I don't know. Is there really? Like, he's running around with his little thin neck, running around talking about wars on masculinity. Do you sit around going, oh, there's a war on masculinity. What am I going to do?
The only one concerned about that is someone's concerned about their masculinity.
I just keep on keeping on. I don't even notice. I suppose there is. But
I don't know.
You know why? Because I'm a man.
You don't worry about your own masculinity. I'm not going to worry about another man's masculinity.
Talking about war on masculinity. I guess if my neck were that small, I'm just joking, I kid because I love.
We have to say again about Liz Cheney when they talk about Donald Trump breaking Liz Cheney. During the Trump years, she voted with Donald Trump much more often than a lot of these people who are now criticizing her. She was not a never Trumper from way back. The breaking point for her was when she saw Americans storming the Capitol, mm-hmm. trying to overturn an election, trying to kill the vice president and the speaker of the House. Yeah, maybe that broke her like it broke a lot of people in this country and had them say enough is enough. And now the next thing that makes her broken by Donald Trump in Ted Cruz's terms is that she voted yes to repair bridges, to pave roads, and to get clean drinking water to people in this country. Not some radical bill.
Yeah.
And that, according to Ted Cruz and others, is what has broken Liz Cheney. They say the evidence.
Yeah. I'll say also about Liz, even during the last year of Donald Trump's presidency, she got it right on COVID. She said, stop the nonsense on COVID. She even told him to stop accusing me of being a murderer a dozen times. She goes, stop talking about Joe Scarborough. Can we talk about issues? Stop being obsessed with Joe Scarborough. So we appreciated that, while people like Kevin McCarthy were like, what? He did what? But she was right on COVID. Mm-hmm. She was right on vaccines. Mm-hmm. So she attacked Donald Trump because, you know, he wanted to get out of Afghanistan, which is what's so rich about people criticizing Joe Biden for getting out of Afghanistan, because Donald Trump is the one who, you know, Liz Cheney was warning a year ago. Don't do that.
And he started that process rolling, Donald Trump did.
Yeah, 12,000 to 2,000 and kept whining, kept trying to get him out of there.
All right, still ahead on Morning Joe. Actor Alec Baldwin is facing a new lawsuit in the aftermath of that deadly shooting on the set of his film, Rust. Plus, the latest from Kenosha, Wisconsin, where lawyers for Kyle Rittenhouse are again calling for a mistrial over a crucial piece of video that prosecutors showed the jury. Also ahead, the man accused of shooting and killing Ahmaud Arbery takes the stand in his own defense and describes what he called a life or death encounter.
Yeah, he was crying because, oh my God, the terror of seeing the black man running away from me, trying to run for his life.
What's he
crying about? With no gun.
Well, he had one. And they spent decades behind bars. Now, the two men found guilty in the assassination of Malcolm X are expected to have their convictions thrown out. You're watching Morning Joe. Look at that beautiful shot of the Capitol this morning.
It is beautiful.
We will be right back.
But look at the colors. It's almost like it's an attack on manhood.
No.
It is beautiful,
it's
though.
Pretty.
Oh, my God. I'm going to go play video games.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
Welcome back to Morning Joe's. We come up on 6:30 in the morning here in New York City. Guys, we were just talking a minute ago about Ted Cruz and Liz Cheney. I mistakenly said Liz Cheney voted for the infrastructure bill. She did not. Mm-hmm. So Senator Cruz's criticism of her is based on the fact that she had the gall to object to an insurrection at the United States Capitol.
Oh, very good. That was it. Well, Mika, you know, I found a good way to trigger progressives to say the word inflation. Hold on. Watch. Inflation.
Okay, what happens?
Well, my Twitter. What?
Okay.
Inflation.
Oh, wow.
Kaboom. It's like they don't want to admit there's inflation.
All
and
right.
You really should talk to middle class Americans and working class Americans, anybody that fills up their tank of gas. This matters, and maybe you don't understand it because you're still living in your mom's basement with Cheetos tweeting out.
Maybe she pays for the gas.
And maybe your mom pays for the gas. But for those of us who are older, have you noticed how I've grown? I didn't say they were sitting in their underwear. Okay,
no,
so I've grown. So you of Cheeto dust on your fingertips, you don't remember what some of us remember in the late 70s?
Oh, my God, what's going on?
Inflation exploding, gas prices going from 33 cents to a dollar. People going to grocery stores and seeing milk and bread.
Mm-hmm.
The prices explode. It matters. And it matters because I remember what my mom and dad would say every day. They would come back from the grocery store. That's where people live. That's why inflation matters. I'm not saying inflation is the Democrats' fault. I'm just saying Democrats need to address it every day. And maybe it washes out. We'll have that discussion in a little bit. I think it may wash out over the next 6 months or so. But it's a problem right now. And this is where voters live right now. So don't wish it away.
Inflation isn't just taking its toll in the U.S. The consumer price index in Great Britain rose more than 4% over the year last month, according to that country's Office of National Statistics. That's worse than had been expected and marks a 10-year high in the cost of living for British citizens. Officials say the rise, more than double the central bank's target, is being driven by soaring energy and gas prices, as well as hotels and restaurants. The Bank of England expects inflation to rise as high as 5% next spring before falling back toward its 2% target by the late 2023.
So Ed Luce, Steve Rattner had a great column in the New York Times yesterday explaining all of this. We're talking a lot, Joe Manchin talking a lot about the bills on Capitol Hill, putting too much money into the economy. But what's happening here, as Rattner said, who's also worried about inflation and has been for a long time, Rattner's saying that part of it is, maybe it's the checks. But a bigger part of it is that $2.3 trillion is sitting in bank accounts right now because people had money over the pandemic that they couldn't spend. And so they've got a ton of money. They're ready to spend it. And that's going to be inflationary. That's why what you're seeing in the United States, we're seeing in Great Britain.
And they can't, for the most part, or to the degree they did before the pandemic, spend it on services.
Right.
They're not going to movie theaters to the same degree they were, or indoor concerts, etc. So the best way of defeating inflation, because the president, as you know, has extremely limited powers to do anything about this. I mean, Biden can name a new Fed chair later this week, but they're all basically of the same view at the Fed.
Right.
He can get rid of this pandemic quicker, as quickly as possible. The quicker that that we get in-person economy going,
right,
then the quicker that spending gets spread away from goods, which is where we're seeing most inflation, and gets absorbed by a broader economy. And that is the best anti-inflation tool that America has. It is fighting COVID more effectively. The shortage of workers, that is also bidding up wages, which is having an inflationary impact.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, eating away all those wage gains, they're just getting wiped out by inflation. That will also be addressed by workers going back to work in restaurants, to work in in-person service jobs that will increase the size of the labor force and reduce that sort of wage price spiral that we associate with traditional inflation. So the central thing that Biden can do is just step up the battle against COVID-19.
I mean, yesterday he tried to address this. I mean, you're right. The president has very little power here. But yesterday he called on the FTC to ask them to begin an investigation of high gas prices and whether whether you should break up the big oil companies. It was a pretty weak thing he did, but he's just trying to address and show the American people he's trying to do something.
Right.
But it's absolutely true. And this is the Democrats point out, the White House points out, this is a once in a 100-year pandemic, and that we've never had this kind of economy before where it was completely shut down artificially. And now that's starting back up again. And they're saying there are these extraordinary events happening as we get back to a normal economy.
And Michael, presidents in the past have liked to talk about tapping into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, cutting gas taxes, sort of things that drive clear-thinking economists crazy. But if you're a politician here, hold a press conference, and today go, we shall tap into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And then tomorrow go, I call on Congress to temporarily cut gas taxes now.
Exactly.
Because, again, this is likely going to wash out over the next 6-9 months. But this is where people live today. It wouldn't be a bad idea for him every day to have an anti-inflationary message.
That's the key piece of it, Joe. I mean,
and by the way, his advisors will say, oh, that's reckless. You can't do that. No, you got to do it, baby. But go for it.
You got to, because it's the political thing to do. As much as we, have the economics driving this and the policy driving this, there is this political piece that, to your point, Joe Biden is struggling with. He's trying to get the footing. Oh, the FTC, go and investigate. The reality of it is exactly what you said, Joe, is how do you talk to people about what they're feeling every day when they walk out the door and put gas in the car and buy groceries?
Right.
And that's why Glenn Youngkin figured it out and said, you know what? As the governor of Virginia, I'm going to eliminate the grocery tax. And everybody went, okay, all right, now you're talking. So it's the short-term solution to what could be a big problem potentially politically.
Right.
And so that's the sweet spot that they're trying to figure out now in the administration. And the COVID piece is an important aspect of that. But it's almost like you're in this sort of catch-22 because those jobs and COVID are sort of chasing each other. And so that's the other side.
Well, they're doing what they need to do in COVID right now, and they'll get the
You still have the worker issue on the back end because, you know, now all of a sudden you've got CDC and others start talking about, oh, we're seeing an increase in COVID, a spike in COVID again. And so that has a chilling effect on the back end of trying to get the economy going with jobs.
But we got vaccines for kids.
Yeah.
We got the Pfizer pills. Even the people who have the tinfoil hats on. Right. And they're getting the messages from Klaatu about how Bill Gates is going to put a chip into their brain if they get the vaccine that would save their life and is a sort of modern miracle of science. Those people can take a pill. And so we're not going to see people dying already. Death rates for COVID for people who have taken the vaccine below the flu.
This is very true. But if you want to relate it to consumer confidence in the economy and going out, you've got to do more than just bring the death rates down, which we have, which the vaccines have done. If you look at Britain, death rates were a tenth of what they were at their peak, and hospitalizations similar. But because the infection rate went up to rampant levels over the last few months, it has had a massively chilling effect on economic growth.
But here's the thing, though. This is we're going to have to adjust to the new reality. It used to be when infection rates would go up, you would have a certain percentage of deaths associated to those infection rates.
True.
We are moving beyond that. We are so far beyond that today to where we were even 6 months ago, post-vaccine. And again, with the pills that people are going to be taking, at some point, we're going to have to get to the point where an infection is not going to be something that shuts down a newsroom, shuts down
an accounting firm. It's becoming endemic, and we're going to adjust to it becoming, going from an epidemic to a pandemic to endemic. But inflation can become endemic, and there are things that you can do. I mean, I appreciate the pulling these levers and appearing to do things like strategic petroleum itself. There's a risk there, though, that these levers get you nowhere. It's just optics. And if you pull all these levers and inflation remains at a high level, you're not going to be looking very effective.
You're thinking like a Democrat and not a Republican. It's just optics? It's just optics?
I'm thinking
Ronald Reagan was just optics, you would say.
He had Paul Volcker strangling the economy.
No. I love Reagan. I'm just saying optics matter. Like, people seeing Joe Biden sweating this out every day matters. And if you cut gas tax, people do notice that. And they'll talk about that. Hey, you hear? Biden's cutting gas tax. Okay, well, it's about time he did something. Right?
Although there'll be a massive wing of the Democratic Party wondering what all these green proposals mean when you're cutting the gas tax. So there'll be a political problem there, too, with the left of the Democrats.
What it means is they don't lose 70 seats next year.
Thank you. That's true.
Sometimes you have to take off your philosopher king cap.
I find that very hard to do.
And say we actually have to win an election or else some very illiberal, dangerous people are taking over the House.
Coming up, two of the men convicted in the assassination of civil rights leader Malcolm X are expected to be exonerated today after investigators say key evidence was withheld in the original trial. Those details are straight ahead, and we'll speak with a pair of attorneys with extensive experience on wrongful convictions. Morning Joe is back in a moment.
And what did you hear, my darling young one? Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the healthcare we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves healthcare. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
Two of the men convicted in the assassination of civil rights leader Malcolm X are expected to be exonerated today. Malcolm X was shot and killed on February 21st, 1965, while delivering a speech at the Audubon Ballroom here in New York City. Now, Manhattan District Attorney Cy Vance says Muhammad Aziz and Khalil Islam's convictions will be thrown out. A third man, Mujahid Abdul Halim, also was convicted. He confessed to the murder at the trial, but has always said Aziz and Islam were innocent. Investigators now say key evidence was withheld in the original trial. FBI documents that would have pointed away from Aziz and Islam were not revealed, and prosecutors did not disclose reports that undercover officers were present at the time of the shooting. Aziz, who now is 83 years old, was released from prison in 1985. Islam was released in 1987 and died in 2009. The investigation was prompted by a 2020 Netflix series called Who Killed Malcolm X? And joining us now are the lawyers representing Aziz and Islam, director of post-conviction litigation at the Innocence Project, Vanessa Potkin, and trial attorney David B. Shanus. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
This is front page news here in New York City and almost all of the papers, Daily News, New York Times, Wall Street Journal. Vanessa, I'll start with you. Did you expect this outcome, or are you pleasantly surprised by what the district attorney found here?
Well, these wrongful convictions have been a miscarriage of justice in plain sight for decades, right? I mean, even as early as the trial when Halim took the stand, there was reason to believe that they were innocent. And in the 55 subsequent years, historians, scholars, activists, journalists have continued to uncover additional evidence. So this reinvestigation in particular started 2 years ago, but at the time it started, there was overwhelming evidence of their innocence going into it. So this is just, this result is a long time coming, but obviously it's great to be here.
So David, let's dig into some of that evidence. What was excluded from the trial? What do we know now because of the work that you all have done and the work that was in that documentary? What did the jury not hear during that trial?
Well, Willie, like you said, what the jury did hear was Halim testify. I did this crime. I did it with four other men, and these two men had nothing to do with it. He was attacked, called a liar, and what was being hidden was that the FBI had a trove of information confirming all the details of what Halim said. The NYPD had information confirming key details of what he said, including where he sat, where the assassins were, where the people who created the distraction were sitting in the audience. And all of that was withheld not only from the defense, but from the prosecution. So, you know, nobody knew about this during the trial. And then years later, in the 1970s, when Halim actually named the names of his co-assassins, the FBI continued to hide the fact that they had all these people's names and descriptions in their files.
So why, Vanessa? That raises the point of why. If they have a guy who's confessed to the murder, Halim, and he's saying it wasn't these two other people, why did the FBI continue to hide that evidence if they already had a man?
Well, that's a question that remains to this day and really needs to be answered. The joint reinvestigation that we just engaged in focused on the wrongful convictions of Mr. Aziz and Mr. Islam. And that investigation concluded that the convictions couldn't stand, right? But the question of why the evidence of their innocence was ignored, why it was ignored at trial, and specifically because there was evidence pointing to the true assailants, why was the government willing to let the true assailants walk free and continue with the prosecution and continued incarceration of innocent individuals? That is a question that needs to be taken up.
So, David, there's a infamous interview that Malcolm X gave 2 days before he was murdered where he said, the Nation of Islam is trying to kill me. The Nation of Islam is trying to kill me. So you've looked at this as closely as anybody on earth. What do you think happened that night?
Well, you heard it directly from the person who participated. Mujahid Abdul Halim, who was then known as Talmadge Hayer, says that he and four men from the mosques in Newark and Paterson, New Jersey, traveled to New York together. They sat in the Audubon Ballroom. There was a pre-planned attack. There was a diversion staged. And while the security guard's attention was diverted, they attacked Malcolm X. One man fired a shotgun, and then two other men fired pistols at him and killed him.
Vanessa, Elizabeth Bue Miller of The New York Times has a question for you. Elizabeth?
As you see, my newspaper did a very interesting story about this the last couple of days. I just wanted to follow up on the earlier question that Willie had, which is, short of recklessness and racism, do you have theories about why the FBI and the New York City Police Department basically suppressed this evidence for 55 years?
There are a lot of theories. I mean, part of the evidence that was suppressed, as David mentioned, was that there was an undercover NYPD officer in the ballroom at the time, and his observations corroborated Halim's testimony. And the government obviously, you know, prioritized protecting their informant, protecting his identity, which only came out years later during, the Panther 27 trial. And so basically, you know, is it because they acted to protect their informants? Did they have other motivations? Again, these are, you know, questions that need to be answered. Were some of the people involved even informants for the FBI? I mean, these are questions that remain to this day.
Michael Steele here. Just to follow up on that a little bit, in terms of the types of questions that are out there on the street, how have you found the response of the Nation of Islam and others who probably had a little bit more information? How have they responded to your investigation and the revelations here? And what do you expect will happen going forward to sort of vindicate further the truth in this matter?
David?
Well, Michael, I don't know exactly what the Nation of Islam would say about this. I do know that a former member of the Nation of Islam was one of the new witnesses who we interviewed during the investigation. He was a man who turned out to be an alibi witness for our client, Muhammad Aziz, who was unknown at the time of the trial. And that was important new evidence that came up. But the evidence of these men's innocence has been in plain sight for 55 years, and justice has come far too late for them.
So, Vanessa, before we let you go, Khalil Islam died more than a decade ago. He didn't live to see this day. But when you speak to Muhammad Aziz, how is he feeling? We were just discussing in the commercial break, these are bittersweet moments for people who are exonerated while there's celebration, splashy headlines everywhere. He was in prison for a long time for something he didn't do.
Yeah, there's something about this day that is vindicating, and it's really important to go back and to correct the historical record. And if you've been shouting something for 55 years, to have that officially recognized has a significance. But it really is, you know, there's nothing to celebrate right now. You know, lives were ruined by these wrongful convictions. And let's not forget, you know, what the Shabazz family has endured, right? Malcolm X was assassinated, and they have never received justice either.
Well, I know both of you have been working on this for a very long time. So congratulations on finding justice here. Vanessa Potkin, David B. Shanus, thank you both for being here. Still ahead this morning, the self-described QAnon shaman gets prison time for his role in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Plus, President Biden returns to Detroit for an infrastructure victory lap in GMC's new electric Hummer. The president in his natural habitat behind the wheel of an American-made automobile. You're watching Morning Joe. We'll be right back.
From Freakonomics Radio, a new series about a role model we didn't know we needed.
So many crazy things really did happen to him.
The physicist Richard Feynman was one of the most brilliant scientists of his generation, but he was also a troublemaker, an obsessive, and a man who spoke truth to power. Along the way, he created a blueprint for how to lead a life of honest inquiry.
He was a brilliant theoretical physicist, but what really made him stand out was his humanity.
The curious, brilliant, vanishing Mr. Feynman on Freakonomics Radio.